abandon free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It is Wednesday, January 8th, 2014. Tom Woods here, and we are smacking down state propaganda Monday through Friday, noon Eastern, at TomWoodsRadio.com. Also on iTunes and anywhere else you might want to grab the podcast. We're joined by Julie Borowski today. Right now, I want to remind you guys that I'm giving away signed copies of my book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History, in recognition of 10 years since its release. To get your copy, join my LibertyClassroom.com website this month, January 2014, and then drop me a note on the contact page saying, hey, you bum, give me my free book. Remember, LibertyClassroom.com is where you get, as of this moment, 9 courses when you sign up. You can download them all, put them in your car, watch them on your computer, watch them on your mobile device, listen to them on your iPod, whatever you want to do with them, listen or watch. We got both formats, and it's courses containing information that we were not taught in school. And these are courses that are taught by me and by people I trust. They're on U.S. history. They're on European history. They're on Austrian economics. We got a course on Keynesianism, explaining the whole system to you and then dismantling it right before your eyes. We got a brand new course on the history of political thought from a libertarian perspective. We got a course on constitutional history from an originalist perspective. It's unfreaking believable. Plus, you get a free book. What are you doing listening to me? Head over to LibertyClassroom.com and claim what is rightfully yours. All right, we are joined today by Julie Borowski. I'm so pleased to be able to have her on the program. Julie has widely published on a variety of topics. She has a wildly popular YouTube channel, Token Libertarian Girl. She's also very successful in social media. She has more likes on Facebook than I do, people. So follow Julie on Facebook, facebook.com/Julie Borowski, B-O-R-O-W-S-K-I. And while you're there, also like me on Facebook at facebook.com/Thomas E. Woods. Anyway, Julie, I'm so glad you're able to be with us here today. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me on, Tom.
You know, I find your whole career absolutely fascinating because you are an example of somebody who basically just came out of nowhere. All of a sudden, boom, you're producing these videos. You get a gazillion subscribers. You get a lot of views on these things. You've got a whole bunch of likes on Facebook. And it seems to me like it's the old-fashioned American story of sheer hard work. You just started doing it. So I want to get to that a little later as to how you did it, because I'm sure there are a lot of people who'd be curious to know how somebody does something like that. But I want to start off with a little autobiography on your part, because you weren't always the person you are now in terms of the views that you hold. So maybe you might give us a little story of how you came to be who you are today.
Sure. Well, thank you for saying that about me, Tom. That's very nice of you. I actually grew up, I considered myself to be a conservative. Looking back, I was probably more of a neoconservative, because my personality, I've always been all or nothing. So my parents were pretty Republican, not super Republican, but they would talk about issues at the dinner table. So I decided that I was a conservative Republican, and that's what I was. I was a huge supporter of Bob Dole when I was about 8 years old, which was embarrassing. But I definitely supported George W. Bush back in high school. And suddenly, I just kind of realized that George W. Bush, well, he wasn't so limited government, small government person that I thought he was. And I started to doubt, especially the wars that were going on at the time in Afghanistan and Iraq. And actually, I was on an online forum, and somebody said the word libertarian. And I had never heard that word before. So I Googled it, and the definition said people that want maximum freedom. And I started looking into it more, and I said, whoa, that's me. I was about 15 years old, but I didn't really get active in the liberty movement until I was 18 in 2007, when I found out about this guy named Ron Paul. And I guess the rest is history from there.
Was there any particular issue, though, that was tricky for you to get on board with? Because there's usually something, one or two things, where you feel like, I think I like the package, but I don't know, this particular ribbon, I'm not sure I care for.
I would say it was foreign policy was a big issue for me. As I said, I started to have doubts. But Julie, back in when I was 13 or 14 years old, it sounds silly because I'm so young, but I was very hardcore into the wars. I remember having debates in my classroom, my history classroom, about the wars, and I just thought anyone that opposed these wars, you know, they hated America, and they were wussies, and they were sissies, they couldn't stand for anything. It was just, now looking back, it's ridiculous. That was probably one of the things that took me a while to finally get and realize that the neoconservative foreign policy was really big government foreign policy. It wasn't small government. It wasn't conservative at all.
So you came to that realization, and eventually now you live in D.C., is that right, the D.C. area?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And is it okay to mention your employer?
Sure. I work for FreedomWorks. I'm a policy analyst there.
And, of course, nothing you say implicates them. These are your own private views. But now, do they actually, is there somebody who's making the videos for you? Is there somebody doing the camera work, or is that all you?
Oh, no. No, I do absolutely everything myself, from writing. Obviously, I'm in the videos, from editing. I actually kept my videos a secret for a while at work because I thought they were terrible. I thought the production quality was really bad. It's all completely me. It's something that I do basically on the weekends by myself in my apartment.
Well, isn't that something? Because now I haven't seen maybe like the first few videos that you did, but obviously it got to a point where you learned how to do them. You learned video editing, you learned how to get it looking right the first time and all that. So now I guess you're probably reasonably pleased with the quality of the videos, right?
Pretty much. It took me a long time because I'm not an expert at technology whatsoever. There were so many problems in the beginning. Me figure out lighting. I just figured out white balance, which is completely a beginner thing. So it took me a while to find out what worked. A lot of people ask, you know, how do I start a YouTube channel? I don't really know that much about video cameras, making videos. You really don't have to at first, because you definitely learn as you go. You don't have to be an expert at it.
No, that's true. And I bet you, if you were to Google, just do a simple Google search, you would find all kinds of sites that will give you the basics, the introductory stuff. I mean, I happen to like the work of a guy named Bill Myers. He has a site, bmyers.com, where he basically just gives you all the answers to all the questions you would want. What kind of equipment do I need? How high of quality does it have to be? What kind of lights do I need? But your stuff comes out looking, I mean, it looks to me like somebody, I mean, I just figured FreedomWorks was doing this for you, to be honest with you. So, I mean, so you've gotten to the point where it looks really good. Like, I look back to my early videos, and I think, oh, my gosh, I mean, it's all blur, it's all wrong looking, you know, whereas now I can produce a pretty good quality video. And, of course, it matters. A lot of people will sit there in front of their laptop with their little webcam built into the computer, and they'll go talking about some issue that matters to them, and that's really sweet that they want to convey their thoughts to the world, but it matters. Just that extra $50 and the extra 20 minutes to make it look good gives you that added credibility, don't you think?
Yeah, I would say so, but in the beginning, just you are basically learning what to do. It's funny that you say that about my videos, because I use a cat tower, you know, the things that cats sit on, as my tripod. I have a pretty cheap video camera, and I just film myself. Sometimes I'm just against my wall in my apartment just talking. So it's not professional quality, it's just me. I think that's what people like about the videos. Well, at least I hope so, that I'm being genuine. It's just me.
I agree completely. Now, on the video question, how do you account for how rapidly you zoomed up in terms of number of subscribers and videos? I mean, I would think it's partly, I mean, let's face it, there aren't that many women in the libertarian movement.
Mm-hmm.
But it can't just be that, because there are plenty of women who do make videos, and yet, is it that you've somehow managed to, let me tell you what my theory is. My theory is that in addition to the fact that you've kept the videos short, and people don't like to watch half-hour videos in general. But also, it seems to me that you have really mastered social media, and that is an explosive combination. What do you attribute it to?
You know, if we're being honest, I would say part of it is that I'm a woman. You know, I can't deny that. There are lack of women in the liberty movement. But I think that's just part of it. I think if people watch my videos and I was a woman, but I was just being, I wasn't saying anything important, they would tune out and not watch my videos anymore. So I think that's part of it. But definitely I've tried to make them entertaining and funny, and sometimes they're completely over the top. But that's what really works on YouTube. I watch other libertarian channels, and some are good, but some are very boring and very, they use a lot of jargon. They're not really appealing to the just common person who's not that interested in politics. So what I've tried to do is make them funny, make them entertaining. And a lot of people message me and say, no, I don't agree with you on pretty much anything, but I like watching your videos because you're kind of crazy. But that's okay, as long as I'm getting the message across. But I've also tried to engage with people on YouTube and Facebook. I ask a lot of people questions, and I try to respond to their comments, and I respond to comments on YouTube. So I try to make it kind of a community.
And that, I think, is absolute key. I watch the way people who are really skilled at Facebook do it. And the 10th Amendment Center is a great example. Like, Michael Bolden has built that thing up into over 120,000 likes, and he's just one guy, but he learned how to do it. And one of the ways to do it, of course, is to do exactly what you're doing, is to encourage the idea that, you know, hey, you all kind of belong to something, and I, the host of this page, am part of that. And I notice that you ask a lot of questions, then people want to respond to that, and you jump in. That's an essential ingredient for making Facebook work. You got to be careful, because on Facebook you're inclined to link to articles and link to blog posts, and they say they're trying to make that work better in the news feed, but in the news feed it seems like videos and graphic memes are what really get people's attention. Are you doing a lot of that?
I obviously post my videos, but I don't want my Facebook just to be like, hey, this is what I think on this topic, this is what I think on this topic, because who wants to hear my opinions all the time, you know? So I try to give them questions people can really engage. And one thing I've noticed about social media is people love to talk about themselves. I think that's just really human nature. So if you give them a question, people just love, hey, this is what I think on this topic. They want to tell you their opinion on something. So it's really fun and engaging.
Oh, you mean libertarians want to tell you their opinion on something? How about that? How about that?
Can you believe it?
All right. You had a recent video on sanctions on Iran. What were the basic arguments that you made in there?
Sure. Well, I just talked about the sanctions. I didn't really talk about the whole situation over there, because I think that's probably a longer video. But really, a lot of people think that sanctions hurt dictators and try to influence policy, but they really don't. Sanctions just hurt regular people in other countries, and they make people starve. And one of the things I've noticed is the unintended consequences of sanctions is that it gives the dictator somewhat of a scapegoat. They can say, hey, the reason why you don't have food is because of the United States. The United States is the problem. So people aren't inclined to try to overthrow the dictator. They blame the United States for their problems. So really, sanctions just create more enemies. So if you're concerned with wanting to be more safe, and definitely sanctions are not the option there.
Seems like Cuba is a classic example of exactly what you just described.
Yeah. Now, why? It's so silly in this day and age. Why is there still sanctions on Cuba? Why can't I travel to Cuba?
Right, and of course it allowed that dirtbag Castro to claim that the problems you're all suffering from are because of the terrible Yankees, as opposed to the crummy economic system I've imposed on you poor souls. Now, I like the fact that these days I'm just so busy with this Ron Paul homeschool program. It's just taking all my energy. And so there'll be issues that come up, and I say, I wish I had time to make a video on this. And the thing is that sometimes a five-minute video can take like 2 hours, you know, because I want to get everything just right, and then the editing afterward or whatever. So I'm always glad to say, all right, well, Julie's done something on this. Now I don't feel so compelled to jump in. But I liked here, now on this, you sent me before we spoke today, you sent me some stuff that you've done, and I like your 7 popular misconceptions about libertarians. Can we go through these? I'm interested in these. I mean, can we go through a few of these? What would you say are the top 3 that you just encounter constantly?
Top 3 misconceptions about libertarians. My audience is a lot of conservatives, which is actually really good because I don't like to just preach to the choir. Yeah. I like to, you know, engage other people. So one of the things I hear a lot in the comment sections is, oh, libertarians, all just a bunch of potheads. They just want to legalize pox and want to smoke all day. I mean, that's just a misconception. Yeah, there are some libertarians that like to smoke pot, but personally, I'm not one of them. I don't like marijuana at all. So really, libertarian philosophy just says that people should be free to put whatever they want into their own bodies. Now, of course, people have to face the consequences of that action. Sometimes people don't make the best decisions, but they have to, you know, live with those decisions. And also, you know, the war on drugs, it's expensive. I don't want to pay to put someone in jail for smoking pot peacefully in their basement, you know? So that's a big misconception. Another misconception, probably, it was definitely big in the Ron Paul campaign, is that libertarians are isolationists. That one just would just drive me crazy every time I saw an article with the word isolationist in it. Really, most libertarians, most consistent libertarians were non-interventionists, which is basically, you know, free trade, free travel, all that stuff is good. You know, what really isolates people from the rest of the world is bombing people and killing innocent people. That's going to create some enemies and isolate you. Another one probably is more liberal saying this, is that libertarians love corporations, big corporations, but it's silly because libertarians, we just support the free market. And the free market is hard for a business because we don't want the government giving any business any special privilege. We oppose handouts, government handouts to business, any government protection to business. So it's really the free market sink or swim. We don't, you know, support corporations.
Well, what I find funny about this, number one, is that if we really were such big supporters of corporations, how come they don't donate to us? You know, why do the corporations always want to throw their money at the mainstream candidates? And then secondly, Rachel Maddow is like the cover girl for progressives, and yet her view, she was all for the bailouts because, well, you know, we need that to save the economy. Well, wait a minute. Then how come she is the great defender of the common man and you and I are the plutocratic supporters of the corporations? I don't quite get it. Let me ask you something that comes to mind, though, especially because you are in D.C., so the question naturally arises about your view on politics, because libertarians, of course, are divided on this. Now, I think most libertarians are not as anti-politics as we might think. It's just because the group of libertarians who are extremely anti-politics are extremely loud. I don't mean that in a bad way, but they express their opinion forcefully and repeatedly, and so you think there are more of them than there are. But I understand completely all the arguments against getting involved in politics and how corrupting it is and it's pointless. I understand and have absorbed that. But what is your view on the subject of politics? I mean, should we be getting involved in it? And if so, do you see any bright spots on the horizon?
I mean, I always feel uncomfortable telling libertarians what to do. If they want to get involved in politics, that's fine. If they want to do an oral education thing, that's fine. If they just want to completely opt out of the system and move to New Hampshire, just do you. But personally, I am someone involved in politics. My videos have taken more of an education approach for the past year. But really, my idea is I want to get the government out of people's lives as quickly as possible and as reduced as possible. I believe that politics is a good route for that because when I look at it, you know, I'm in D.C. I've lived in the area all my life. It's a miracle of government even slash ending, let alone just completely disappeared from our life. But I'm so focused on, you know, short-term goals that are winnable in the near future as opposed to just completely, you know, going off the grid, I suppose.
Well, what are some of the areas where you think there's a possibility for some kind of rollback of the government or some kind of short-term victory, as you say? Like, what kind of areas seem to be, like, low-hanging fruit?
I think a lot of people are waking up to a couple of different things. I'm reading right now on legalizing marijuana in Colorado, which is a good thing, though their tax way too high. But even like the National Review has come out and said, you know, legalizing marijuana is a good thing. I think even conservatives are saying, yeah, why not? Why is marijuana still illegal in most places? So that's one area that a lot of people are waking up to. I think a lot of people are concerned about civil liberties right now. I don't think it's a Republican or Democrat thing. I think just those people are saying, hey, you know, the NSA is completely out of control. I don't want them to be spying on me. That's one issue that I would say people are waking up to. There's a couple of different issues. When you look at what happened in the Syrian war, you know, I don't think that would happen a couple of years ago. Really, it was, like I said in the NSA, it wasn't a Republican or Democrat issue. Just most people completely opposed the war in Syria, and we actually stopped that, and that was amazing. So I think people are waking up to a couple of different things, and hopefully it'll get even better in the future.
Yeah, I've said on this program several times that the Syria thing really surprised me, because it seems to be a pattern of the past, well, actually, I don't know how many years, in which some foreign policy item appears in the news, and before you know it, within a month, there's a war going on, or there's a bombing campaign going on. It seems sort of unstoppable. It's like you have this sense of dreary predictability of how it's all going to turn out, and then, as you say, this spontaneous and completely unexpected popular opposition to it. But do you think some of that is because, I mean, do you think if that had been George W. Bush, they would have said, let's go ahead and bomb Syria?
I'm not sure. I think, you know, part of it was definitely an anti-Obama. Obama wants war in Syria, so that's bad because he's Obama. But I also think it's a lot of just daring influence within people saying, you know, these wars are a bad thing. You know, people are actually saying, hey, what's the national security interest in Syria, which is something they didn't really do in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, a lot of Democrats are still against the wars, even though they haven't been exactly protesting them. I think they still have that tendency to say, well, you know, this is a bad thing.
My view is that we might as well, since we're stuck with Obama, we might as well take this opportunity and think of it as a pedagogical sort of moment that we can get through to some of these Tea Party people by saying, now, look, this certain thing that Obama was proposing to do was bad in and of itself. It was bad not because Obama proposed it, but it was just bad, right? It would have been bad if anybody else had done it. And so this, I think, actually has been one silver lining that's come out of this, that these people, for example, have been more likely to consider out-of-the-mainstream approaches like nullification than they would otherwise have done, because they feel like the guy in the White House is a bad guy and he's not our friend. I wish they would have that view all the time, because basically practically anybody who's going to get to the White House is going to be a bad guy and going to be not your friend. All right, let me ask you this. If you had to narrow it down to three people who have influenced you the most, the way you think, and we exclude Ron Paul, so I'm going to make it slightly harder, 33% harder, okay? Who would the, and I exclude, you know, it'd be very sweet if you mentioned my name, so I'm going to exclude myself, okay? Just I want you to be honest here. Who would those people be?
Well, definitely Tom Woods.
Now, get out of here. You're disqualified. All right, who else?
No, but seriously, I remember watching a YouTube video with you a couple years ago, and you were explaining how you used to be more conservative and the war has kind of changed you, and that was really powerful because I found myself so much in that story. Not to suck up or anything, that's just really the truth.
Thank you.
Three people, definitely my grandfather. He's not a famous person, but he definitely instilled values of hard work into me. Another person, you know, all the libertarian philosophers, F.A. Hayek, Mises, Rothbard, my economics teacher, I think you know him, Bill Anderson from Frostburg State University.
You were a student of his?
Yes, I was a student of his. I took a couple economics classes with him.
Get out! That's great!
Yeah, that was wonderful because I was a political science major. So, you know, all the political science teachers, most of them were pretty liberal. So it was great to go to Dr. Anderson's class and not be, you know, brainwashed with
right.
all that stuff.
Well, that's great. Now, what would be the advice you'd give to somebody who comes up to you and says, you know, I'm not sure I'm on board with you completely, but I am intrigued. Like, I want to know, what is my entry point into these ideas? Like, what would you recommend that person do next?
Oh, I love those people. I get those messages a lot. I would just say, a lot of people ask me, you know, what's the one book that I should read to learn about libertarian philosophy? I always say Economics in One Lesson, because that's just a simple book to read. It really covers pretty much all economics, the basics at least. But I always say, you know, Cato Institute, Reason, Mises, all these resources that are really online. You know, I'm not really old, but a lot of older libertarians I talk to are always like, you young people are so lucky you have the internet these days and there's so much information out there. So really just using them. I guess I always try to link I always ask them what they're most concerned about. And I try to see where they're coming from. And I try to put a libertarian spin on that.
I think that is the best way to go. Now, I wanted to ask you this earlier, but so before I let you go, I want to know, of all the videos you've done, is there one that, in terms of the number of views, just vastly outpaced all the rest? Is there one that has far more views than any of the others? And if so, which one is that?
There's one video that went somewhat viral. It has, 300,000 views now. I'm not sure if you remember, but Lena Dunham, she's an actress. She has the HBO show Girls. She did an Obama ad called My First Time. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. So you did one, and that went... I consider 300,000 for a libertarian video to be super viral.
Well, see, if somebody listening doesn't know what I'm talking about, she compared, voting for Obama to losing her virginity, which is just really gross. So I made a parody video, just basically poking fun at it. And that went... I was amazed because before that, my audience was pretty much all libertarians, which is to be expected. But all of a sudden, my videos started getting shared on more conservative, mainstream websites. I said, whoa, I can actually, reach out and, spread the message to non-libertarians. So that was amazing. I couldn't believe that happened to me.
That's nice. You can never tell what... Like, I've made videos that I think, people are going to love this one, and they sink without a trace. And then I make some, kind of half-assed video, and it just... I don't know. I can't figure people out, but that's the marketplace for you. If people want to follow you online, what's the easiest way for them to do that?
Sure. My YouTube channel, it's Token Libertarian Girl. I go by Julie Borowski on there. Twitter, Julie Borowski. Facebook, Julie Borowski. I guess you could find me there.
And you don't have a single website that brings all this stuff together? Maybe you should.
Maybe I should. I don't know how to do that. I do everything on my own. I don't know how to create a website.
Well, me either. The division of labor. I hire people to do it at one time, and then I don't touch it, basically, is my general 80% of the time rule. Well, I appreciate you taking this time. I mean, as I say, I was just saying to my wife the other night, I said, I got to make sure I have something interesting to talk to Julie about. There's so many things I want to ask her, and I don't know if my audience cares as much as I do about things like YouTube and Facebook and social media. But when I encounter somebody who's a real master of it, like you and Michael Bolden, I just want to talk shop the whole time. I got to be careful not to do that. But I'm really excited about how you've done. And as I say, I mean, really just coming out of nowhere, all of a sudden you just started making the videos. You just kept on doing it, And then all of a sudden you built up a following for yourself, and in this sort of world where you can't expect to follow the traditional kind of career path that people used to, which is I go to school and then I just fit into a cookie cutter sort of career, that just doesn't work anymore. And you basically have entrepreneurially built up something for yourself, and people ought to imitate that if they can. So anyway, Julie, I've really appreciated your being with me here today. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Tom.
All right, that's Julie Borowski, everybody. Check her out. We got links to her social media in the show notes, but twitter.com/Julie Borowski, facebook.com/Julie Borowski. That's where to go to follow her. Upcoming events. I'm going to be speaking in Houston alongside Ron Paul on January 18th. Then February 7th, I'll be in Chestertown, Maryland at Washington College. And February 8th, I will be speaking giving the Ludwig von Mises lecture at the Austrian Student Scholars Conference at Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania. Get more details on all my events at my personal site, tomwoods.com, on the events page, tomwoods.com/events. Tomorrow on this program, Pauline Dixon from the E.G. West Center. You're not going to believe what she has to say tomorrow about what she and her team found going around the developing world. She found that private schooling is everywhere. It's cheap, it's effective, it's way better than the government-run schools, and it's a story no one is going to tell you, except right here tomorrow on The Tom Woods Show. And don't forget, you can help us keep the lights on here in our little Tom Woods Show office at no cost to yourself When you're about to make a purchase on Amazon, just enter Amazon via our little Amazon widget at TomWoodsRadio.com. And at no cost to yourself, you can help us pay our bills. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.